Hello, I'm Mark DeLuzio. Over the past century, our constitutional republic, grounded in the rule of law, has been transformed into a tyrannical democracy, orchestrated by unelected bureaucrats and globalists. The Constitution is now treated as a suggestion, not the law of the land. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God.
Hi, I'm Mark's co-host, Suzette Lawrence. Our intention is to explore the Constitution and discuss how our freedoms and constitutional rights are violated by those very politicians who took an oath on the Bible to uphold it. Learn how the Constitution is the solution to our country's problems. What do we need to do to restore our inalienable and enumerated rights? Class begins now.
Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God. Mark DeLuzio with Suzette Lawrence, and we have a very special guest today, a good friend of mine and a real constitutionalist, Congressman Paul Gosar.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hi, Paul. And you're in Washington today, it looks like.
We are, believe it or not.
I do believe it. A little bit of background. Paul and I have known each other now for quite some time. When I ran for Congress, we got to know each other. I've been to many of his events, and he's one of the most constitutional-oriented congressmen. Matter of fact, I think you were voted that one time. Mm-hmm. But you're in the 9th District right now over in Arizona, which is on the west side of the state. It's a pretty big district. You're a former dentist,
yep.
Which I think is absolutely appropriate for Congress, because getting things done, it's like pulling teeth, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And but you're also very good on the Constitution. You really are driving for limited government, less liberty, all the things that our founding fathers were trying to get that we're so far away from now. And by the way, you're on a couple committees here, House Committee on Natural Resources. You're on the Subcommittee of Energy and Mineral Resources, Oversight and Accountability. I'd love to be on that one.
I'm actually the chair on that one. I'm the Subcommittee chair.
Day.
Oh, yeah, we're having a fun time.
Subcommittee on National Security and the Border and Foreign Affairs. How do you find any time to do anything with all these committees? You are recognized.
We're talking about, Mark.
How much time are you in meetings? I mean, you're in meetings all the time, right?
Well, pretty much. But, yeah. you got to like people. That's one thing. You got to like to debate. And there's one thing I am. I'm a dog on a bone.
We know that.
I do not quit.
Well, that's why they come after you, okay? I always said, I think when you and I first met and we had breakfast, I said to you, you know, when they come after you, you know you're doing the right thing, right? So,
exactly.
And by the way, you were voted or recognized by GovTrack as one of the most effective members of Congress, okay? So anyway, that's your background, but you wanted to talk about, we wanted you to talk about emergency spending, which is one of the many ways I think that the government is circumventing the powers of Congress. There's all kinds of other ways, but this is something that nobody really knows much about. It's kind of hidden from the public, I think, in some sense. So talk to us about emergency spending. You and I had some good conversations on it over the course of time.
Well, let's start from the very beginning. Most of us knew nothing, just like you said. Most of us knew nothing until COVID came around,
right.
And then a national emergency was declared, and then everything they told us wasn't true. And so I'm the only, believe it or not, I didn't know that this was going to happen, but I am the only non-U.S. president to kill a national emergency. I killed the COVID national emergency. Okay, now why did my interest get really peaked up? Well, first of all, we spent between 4.8 and over $7 trillion during COVID. So when we killed this, we thought, okay, things are going to be just right and fine. No, we found there's 41 open national emergencies. They've been misused by both parties, presidents of both parties. Now let's go back. How do you start these national emergencies? It's a declaration by the president. Now Congress in our Article 1s, was given the power of the purse.
Right.
Unless you call a national emergency. This part came up in the late 1970s, if I'm not mistaken, and it allows the executive above the Congress to start dictating this money. Hey, that's why we had no checks and balances. What the law requires is the Secretary of the Treasury, during this emergency, to come to Congress every 6 months and give them an indication of how much they spent, where to go, how to go, how much is how long do they think it's going to last? Okay, well, this is another set of books, Mark. It's completely off of our other set of the regular books that everybody's worried about the budget. Now, when I saw this, I was raising some cane because there was no receipt. Today, there is still not one receipt in the Secretary of Treasury for COVID, not one. So upon that 6 months review by the Secretary of Treasury, when it's finally killed, they have 90 days to disperse anything and then they have to take it back. How come they're still offering these COVID dollars down in California? Now there's a rumor there's over $1 trillion still left behind. Okay. So we got problems. So we have done number one, we killed it. We've been barking like a storm. You know, we got to have reforms on this. Cato, the Cato Institute heard me barking. So they decided they were going to investigate this. They were come out with what they call a white paper, you know, where we have one piece of paper and we say, this is what we stand for, our outline. That turned into a booklet. That's how much is here. They found that between Clinton and Biden, that whole time there, both sides, both Republicans and Democrats, spent almost $12 trillion during that time. That's one third of our national debt, folks. This is not peanuts. This is big change, big money. And then when we took on the 41, we thought, well, we'll take on the first five. So we found out there was Libya, was a national emergency. They still cited, this administration re-upped it 2 years ago, they still cited Muammar Gaddafi. Muammar Gaddafi's been dead 11 years.
Amazing.
Iraq, Syria, Congo, and Yemen. The high mark was Libya. That's what I pointed at first. I took that bill. We only got 39 votes.
Wow.
And so what happens is we had the chairman of foreign affairs get up in front of everybody and say, listen, we need this emergency money because we have a terrorist watch list with it. I don't think that has nothing to do with Team China.
That's right.
Terrorist watch list should be somewhere else. This is a way of funneling money, and it has been. We found the big debacle one after another. Money, 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 money. This is how they work the money back and forth. There's no checks and balances with it. And so we actually put forward a bill that basically says, okay, president can start the emergency, but he has to get have the okay with Congress within 30 days. And then after so long, you bring it to the regular budget. Okay, it can't be emergency spending. It has to come back to the regular budget for Congress to say, okay, how long is it going to take? We have to have rectification. So that's where we're going to start. And we need the Secretary of Treasury to answer up. They haven't. But $12 trillion, Mark?
So by the way, Paul, so 12, that's like from about 1990, I think, right? $12 trillion. And just to give people a sense of what that means, because a lot of times we talk these numbers and, you know, our normal tax intake from both corporations and taxpayers and all that is somewhere just shorter, I believe, $4 trillion, right? That's kind of what we take in every year. Rough numbers. I'm
plus or minus.
Ballpark. Yeah. Ballpark, mm-hmm. Right? So think about what Paul's saying here. Congressman Paul is saying is our normal taxes just to run the government, which, by the way, a lot of which is unconstitutional to begin with, okay?
You're back to states' rights. Right? You're back to the states where it belongs to the states.
Exactly. 10th Amendment and all that, back to the states. We got all these departments that we're funding billions of dollars. I think there's 4,000 people in the Department of Education. We don't need them at all, right? But the point I'm making, though, is that $12 trillion on normal tax receipts of short of $4 trillion from us taxpayers, okay? To put it in context of how big that really is, this is outside the budget, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I looked at this Cato report, and the Office of Budget Management and Budget, OMB, came out with some guidelines, which I think are a joke. There's five conditions that you need to meet an emergency spending bill, okay? One is necessary. Two is sudden. Three is urgent. Four is unforeseen. And five is not permanent. Okay. Right. The one I like, I laugh at all is necessary. Says who? Based on what guidelines? Okay.
There's none.
This is a joke. This is an absolute joke.
It is. And it gives the executive above par above Congress because they can say where the money goes, how much money goes. That's why this COVID national emergency has brought this to our attention. You know, we stumbled on this. Really, we stumbled on this. And anytime you have one open national emergency, you don't have the power of the purse solely resting with Congress. The executive now has that and shares it with you. So now we have 41. You know, we want to go through each one of these. So since when do we have a national emergency with Libya? When do we have a national emergency with Congo? This is absolutely ludicrous, Mark. And that's why we have to get some change on here. Most people don't know it, but we ought to start here because $12 trillion is big, big money.
Yeah.
One third of our national debt. And so we gotta bring everything back in line.
Well, you know, and again, I want to go back on the constitutional principles, Paul. You know, earlier in our podcast, our whole podcast is about teaching people about the Constitution, right? And which I don't think our school systems do an awful good job at, if at all. And one of the things we talked about was the separation of powers between the executive, legislative, and judicial branch, the Supreme Court. And the executive branch being the president, he can't spend money. Okay. He can approve a budget, but basically it's the Congress that has, as you said, the power of the purse. So by doing this, you have the executive branch, in this case, the president, spending money outside the authority of Congress. You also have these regulations by these unconstitutional agencies that write regulations that have the power of law. So all of a sudden now you've got the executive branch writing law in a sense, because these regulations could take your house. They could put you in jail.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got all these infringements. And then, of course, you got the military industrial complex, which is a whole nother matter for another day, which you've got all of these infringements on our form of government. Our checks and balances, to me, was the most ingenious thing of all the things that the founders did. Was the most ingenious thing that they put into our framework, and that is being stomped on, and every time they stomp on it, the president stomps on that. And I heard Tulsi Gabbard last night talk. I mean, I'm sorry, Kamala Harris talk about she's going to give $50,000 to people to buy a home.
Where's that money coming from?
Well, you know where it's going to come from, you and me and Suzette and others, and you know, but she has no right to do that. I don't know why Trump didn't call her on. Just not, you know, you're a lawyer. What did you learn about the Constitution? You can't do that. Okay. This is not like Halloween where we can just dish out this candy, but I guess based on what's going on, maybe it is. I don't know.
It is because, you know, just today, Mark, you know, the speaker pulled the CR, continuing resolution. So you go back to the previous budget that was passed, the Pelosi budget, and you're putting those numbers in there. That's how you're spending. Okay. Because we were going to do that, not kick that can into next year, when President Trump could be back in office, we're going to wait to the end of the year. And regardless, we're going to have a new president. So we're going to have an omnibus bill where we're going to spend money out the wazoo. It's not a little, it's going to be a lot. And they'll use the timetable of Christmas and New Year's and the new Congress to hold that against everybody. That's how they do things here. It's so wrong, so wrong. I want to go back to one of the things you said. Yes. There's the thing called the Impoundment Act, and there's the called the Anti-Deficiency Act. You're right. Congress dictates where the money goes, and the executive has to spend it the way Congress does. I'll give you an example. Going back to COVID, Barack Obama told Anthony Fauci, don't go there for gain of function. That's all he could do because Congress, somebody in Congress, or a staffer on the committee, put the language that allowed for gain of function to be paid for. So he did his job. He couldn't change it. All he had to do was involve Congress. Do you know that same writer is still in the bills that we're writing today?
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. Here's the next thing, the Anti-Deficiency Act. The Anti-Deficiency Act requires that if you're going to spend money, you have to have it dictated by Congress. Yeah,
I think that's the way it was supposed to be. I mean,
you're exactly right. The checks and balances. Exactly.
I mean, right. You know, and it's almost like we don't even think about the Constitution anymore, which is why I have supported you since day one, since I met you, moving out here to Arizona. And, you know, I look at a very handful, the only handful of congressmen, really, when you look at it, in Congress that really understand and live by the Constitution. That's one thing to understand it, but it's also to vote in concert with the Constitution. So, and there's so many.
They don't give us very many chances, Mark. It's always a bad choice or a worse choice. That's all we get.
Well, I think that's a really good point too, because Suzette and I have talked about the fact that you could vote for a bill. Let's say it's for veteran benefits and all that, but in there they put a Planned Parenthood provision. You know, I know Reagan tried to get rid of tried to put in a line item veto, which the Supreme Court rejected, which I really do think, in all due respect, the Supreme Court was right, as much as I don't like it. But then all of a sudden you get tagged for voting for something for Planned Parenthood, because if you don't vote for it, you get tagged for not voting for veterans, right?
Well, see, I mean, that's why we always ask, we should be asking for single subject bills, so that there's nothing else included in there. You know, we keep finding out all these different things. You know, one of the big things now is COA, or the cost of living increases for members of Congress. We had to go through step by step through a bill, the CR, to find out if they had put it in there. Because all the Dems want to have it, but no one wants to take the accountability for it.
That's right. That's right.
You know, I think it's crap that we're doing that when people are hurting, when they can't put food on the table, they don't know if they're going to pay their insurance or their car payments.
Well, I think there's a lot of that going on relative to not being accountable and not have, you know, for example, all of these wars that Biden is fighting right now with Yemen and we're in Iraq. You know, it's funny, you know, my son who got killed mm-hmm. in Afghanistan, his first tour of duty was in Iraq, in Ramadi, the worst place you could have been in 2006. And the campaign is right on his grave. It says Iraqi freedom. Okay. As a campaign, and also enduring freedom, which was Afghanistan. So he fought with both those campaigns. Iraqi freedom. We were supposed to free Iraq. Okay. We were supposed to free them, and we were supposed to, I'm sure bring our way of life there, which is a joke. We'll never do that. But now we're attacking them. Okay. And so I challenged Mike Johnson in person. I was only 15 feet from him. Said, how could you actually allow Biden to go to war without coming to you? Article 1, Section 8. You can only declare war. He said, well, that's not the only thing he's doing. I said, look, I know tuition reimbursement does not rise to the level of putting our men and women in harm's way in these unconstitutional.
Okay. Those are rules.
Complex. I got all that. The Cheneys and the whole crowd are making a lot of money on these wars, you know. So mm-hmm. it's just another way for us to get sideways with what our federal government was supposed to be to begin with, you know. I know.
You are so right. You are so right. And this place is so messed up, Mark, that I have said over and over again, the first thing we have to have is we have to get back to the rule of law. Louise Brandeis, a former Supreme Court justice, said that perfectly. If the government is based on laws, the government must be held scrupulously to adhere to those laws. Because when the government violates the law, it invites every man and woman to violate the law. It invites anarchy. And that's what we have today, anarchy. There's no disposition to follow the law. There's no disposition to follow the Constitution. It's like bad choices and worse choices.
Yeah, and I guess the thing that really bothers me, Paul, is there's no repercussions on the people who obviously broke the law.
Oh, absolutely. They come to Congress and lie through their teeth, and still there's no perjury charges.
That's right.
You know, they can lie to Congress about what they spent, like in COVID. You know, the VA, just to hear me out on this one. So HHS knew that this vaccine wasn't going to help because the VA was giving them right and left. They had these complications. So they knew 2 weeks. When did they stop? When did they stop? No wonder Robert Kennedy Jr. says what he says. Because
I agree.
They used us as guinea pigs.
I agree. By the way, Paul, one of the earlier episodes I did on the military-industrial complex, Pfizer is the fifth largest defense contractor. Pfizer.
Yep.
You know, you got Raytheon, you got Boeing, you got Lockheed, you got all those guys. They're bigger than L3Harris. They're bigger than Pfizer. Is, I think, the number five defense contractor. How does that work? Okay. You know how it works.
Oh, I do. So, you know, you got to think. I wonder, you know, what's going on? Is it a biological? You know, where is all this stuff going? Because it makes you really that, you know, they call us the conspiracy, you know, theories, folks. You know, there's a lot of ifs and outs about that.
Well, you know, one of the episodes I've done was on Robert Welch, who was the founder of the John Birch Society. Back in 1958, he wrote the Blue Book. And I went through every single prediction and accusation he made, and he is batting 1,000. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have the internet back then, Paul. Okay. Suzette?
Mark, and Congressman Gosar, I just wanted to also bring up that the COVID response, warp speed, the shots, mandating that people get the shots, even though what they didn't legally have to. And there were people that had figured out, Catherine Austin Fitz at Solari.com had a beautiful like affidavit for employers to sign that would take, they were the employer, not the company, but the actual president of the company that was making these declarations, you have to get this experimental shot. Of course they weren't at that, they were pretending.
Hey Suzette, I don't know if you see this, Paul, but you're breaking up. I don't know what's going on with your connection, but I think your question was about companies who actually force people. I have friends at General Electric, for example, and I know Larry Culp. I worked with Larry for 10 years. They forced their employees to get the shot. Otherwise, you lost everything. You lost your pension, your stock options, your job. Okay. And to me, that is just unbelievably discriminatory, no different than race or whatever else.
Right. And here's the deal. Every single person who takes a vaccine shot, that vaccine pays a certain percentage that goes into the compensation fund for people who have adverse reactions to the vaccine. Do you know that this Pfizer vaccine never had to do that?
No.
Do we have a bill that basically says you pay that up for every vaccine shot that was given, or you have unlimited liability? Pick. That's your choice. We got to stop this because we can't let these people just get away with it. In fact, one of the people running for the state house, his name is Nick Cupper. Nick Cupper was fired from the Air Force for not taking the shot.
Yeah.
And he got his stuff back, but he had to go through a whole regiment to get this thing back, his benefits and stuff. How bad is that? A government that can tell you what to do, when to do it, how to do it, is a tyrannical government.
Well, and we can't forget that experimentation on secretive experimentation on human populations was known back in the 40s during the Nuremberg trials. Rule number 7 says you can't do that. You cannot experiment on humans and that have no idea that this is an experiment. And this was, I think I understood that President Trump put $2 billion to the vaccine manufacturer for warp speed. They already had the shots ready to go, so there was no like rush to create a vaccine for COVID. That I believe is a bold-faced lie. And half of that money went to advertising. Every starlet in Hollywood was telling us how we had to get the shot to protect Granny. So the PSYOP here, a psychological operation to make people feel guilty and to make them the virtue signaling of I got the shot, and all of the Facebook and social media little things that said I got my COVID vaccine, you know, I'm a good citizen. And of course, most people, even nurses and doctors, when they're taught about the vaccines, they're taught a vaccine schedule, and they're never
Suzette, I'm going to stop you there because you're really tough to hear. You're breaking up. I don't know why. And maybe sign back out and sign back in. And we're going to need to wrap it up because I know the congressman's time is tight here. Okay.
No,
okay.
She is so right. She is so right. You know, from that standpoint, you know, we just had a hearing. I mean, the chairman of the Oversight Committee on Natural Resources. And guess what our conversation was about yesterday? About these macaw monkeys. These macaw monkeys are used as the guinea pigs for humans. So when they're in the final testing of trials, they use these macaw monkeys. And you see how the organs respond, all this stuff. They knew. But here's what the benefit was here. There was this guy, and he made a comment. He said, we don't know what this is going to be, but there's good things to do. Go back to what your grandmother used to say. If you know what it is, take care of yourself. Sleep well. Eat well. Exercise. Take your belly and expose it in northern latitudes of between 10 and 2 for 20 minutes to get your vitamin D. That's, you know what? That guy was right. Today, the thing for COVID, all the stuff works. Then when you cut it, like the ivermectin, the hydroxychloroquine, when they're given in certain ways, it works. But this guy was right because you can help yourself by, if you're predisposed to getting COVID over and over again, you're supposed to use peroxide or an iodine saline mist. This is where the nose, all these conches, all these little bones, this is where it was originating. You would harbor in here, and unless you got it out and killed it, that's why you kept getting reinfected.
Yep. I know we got to let you go, but I really appreciate you being on. I look at a few fighters for our country, real fighters. And, you know, I know the people in the 2nd District when I was running that lost you, Suzette lost you to go to the West Side into the 9th District when we redistricted. But people were really upset that you were leaving. And I will tell you this, Paul, whenever somebody would ask me about term limits, which I'm against, okay?
Yeah.
And there's reasons why, and a lot of people don't understand that our Constitutional Convention, one of the main reasons it got together was because of the disaster that term limits were. But they would say, Mark, what do you think about term limits? Don't we need those? I go, I don't know. How would you guys feel if Paul Gosar was term limited? We never thought of it that way, okay? And so I put, okay, look, you think the guys that are voting for Nancy Pelosi are going to vote for somebody else that you're going to approve of? Are you kidding me? You're going to get a younger version of Nancy Pelosi, like an AOC, and maybe even worse. So, you know, I just am against term limits from that respect. And I used you, sorry, as a guinea pig, because I said, how would you like Paul?
I appreciate that, Mark. Yes.
Yeah, so
go back to, you know, our founding, you're exactly right. This is one of the last issues that they brought up. Do we have a well educated electorate, or do we put term limits? And they use the term limits being the part of the well educated electorate, because if they weren't being heard, they weren't being seen, they weren't being
exactly
that the electorate would take them out.
Well, that's why we're having this. We do this podcast, okay, to try to help that, because we aren't misinformed or not informed at all. And, you know, so I look at that. And by the way, people say, well, you know, the president, there's term limits for the president. Why not for Congress? The founders didn't put that in. Okay.
Well, but also here's the other deal. Remember, they George Washington, they went in for a third term. He said no. Even Ulysses Grant, people don't realize he was so popular at the end of the second term, they wanted him to do a third term. He said no.
That's right. And they
all come back to the same issue. When you have more than two terms as a top dog in a republic, it turns into a monarchy.
That's right.
So there's checks and balances. God love you, Mark, for doing this. I got to go, but I just got to say, thank you very much for having us on. I hope to have
Paul,
us on.
You're awesome. You're awesome. I hope to see you soon somewhere here in Arizona. I'm sure we will bump into each other. And I do appreciate it. Suzette, sorry we couldn't really get to you clearly on this one. For some reason, the internet guys weren't with you today. But, Paul, stay safe, okay? That's the first thing I think about with you is stay safe.
Will do. And if everybody's interested, we have a great newsletter that we put out every week.
I get it.
Go to ghostar.house.gov and get that newsletter. We'll keep you well informed, and we'd love to interact with our constituents. Just because I don't represent you, I'm still from Arizona. We have people all across the country that subscribe. That's what it'd be. Be a well-informed constituent. Be a well-informed elector.
And by the way, it's one of the key sources I go to because I get your newsletter every time it comes out. And if you really want to find out what's really going on, get Congressman Gosar's newsletter. Awesome. All right, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Zach. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks for listening to The Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we hold that strict adherence to the Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems.
You can find other episodes on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other platforms. We're your hosts, Mark DeLuzio and Suzette Lawrence. Until next time, may God bless you and may God bless America.